Hello from the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, and welcome to the Champion in Every Corner podcast. By joining us today, you are actively helping us build a safe, rewarding sports community that prioritizes athlete well-being. On this podcast, you'll hear from experts in the field with innovative ideas to keep you engaged in the game. We want you to join the conversation by sharing your ideas with us. Those ideas might be about topics or certain things that you'd like us to cover. And you can share those ideas with us at content@safesport.org. That is content at safesport.org. And then for our listeners, of course, we have our one final important note. Any information about or a reasonable suspicion of child abuse, including child sexual abuse, must be immediately reported to law enforcement and to the U.S. Center for Safe Sport. And of course, individuals must also comply with any other applicable state or federal laws. On today's episode, it's just me, your host, Mariah Beeris. I'm going to be giving you tangible tools so that you can be prepared to respond in a trauma-sensitive way if someone discloses abuse or misconduct to you. And if you haven't listened to my introduction episode, I recommend that you go back and give it a listen. It's a really short little intro episode that goes over who I am and what my role is at the center. I've been really doing violence prevention work for several years, I think 5 or 6 years now. And a big part of why I do this work is because I want to make the world a better place for survivors of abuse. And one of my favorite topics to train on is supporting survivors of abuse. To me, educating people on how to support survivors is a form of violence prevention. If we have a supportive response and help them get connected to resources, not only will we hopefully help them get started on their healing journey, but we could also potentially impact their willingness to report their abuse or even be involved in an investigation. Now, of course, I do want to just say to add on to that, that it is never the victim or survivor's responsibility to hold their abuser accountable. If they do not want to report or participate in an investigation, that is their choice, and we must respect the choices that they make. But if they do feel supported in making a report or participating in an investigation, we could potentially hold an abuser accountable, which could prevent further abuse from happening. So this podcast episode today is specifically focusing on responding to disclosures of sexual assault from adults. There are, of course, different considerations if you're responding to disclosures from children. So just want to really preface that this is going to be focused on adult survivors of sexual abuse. It's also focused on what to do when someone directly discloses to you. It's not advice on how to confront someone if you suspect that they've been being abused. So that is a little bit of a different conversation. So again, just really want to set the expectations for what you can get out of this podcast episode, that we're really focusing on responding to disclosures in the moment of sexual assault with adults. So let's get right into it. When we think about a person disclosing abuse to us, we often don't think about the many barriers that that person faces when they're considering sharing their abuse. And there are so many barriers that they may be facing whenever they're considering sharing their story. Some of those barriers might be, for one, they know the abuser. We know that in the majority of sexual abuse cases, the victim or survivor knows the person that assaulted them. This can make it especially difficult for them to come forward. So what if the coach who's abusing them is also a friend of their parents? Or what if the athletic trainer that's abusing them is renowned in their field? Being abused by someone that you know can make it that much harder to disclose the abuse. They may be worried about what's going to happen next. Is that person going to find out? All of those things. And so that's just an important consideration to think of when that person is telling you this story. Some other barriers is they might be worried about how you're going to respond, right? And some of the questions that could be going through their head is, will they think it's my fault? Will they get upset if I tell them? What if they don't believe me? These are all questions that a victim or survivor may have before getting to a place where they are ready to disclose. So that's why our response to a disclosure is so important, because hopefully we can help mitigate some of these fears that person has when they are disclosing to us. And then one other barrier that I'll talk about really quick is, of course, that they might be scared of what's going to happen after they disclose, especially if you're a mandatory reporter. So in this podcast episode, I am going to be sharing some tips that are especially good for mandatory reporters to know, because if someone is disclosing to you, one, they may know that you're a mandatory reporter, but if they don't, there are some things that you can do to make sure that they are supported throughout this process. So again, there are so many reasons, and that's not even all of them. I just covered a few. That's why if someone does disclose to you, they're telling you about a traumatic, you know, sexual assault that happened to them, your response to that disclosure can mean a lot. Because a lot of times a victim or survivor may never disclose to anyone. And, you know, maybe they have had a past experience where they disclosed to someone and they were met with judgment or blame or guilt. And then, you know, they decided if I ever experience anything like this, I'm never talking about it ever again. So again, that's why this is so important for us to talk about, of how you can be supportive if a survivor does disclose abuse to you. So the way that I like to talk about this, and this is how I talk about it in trainings, I kind of put it into 5 steps that you can take to be supportive. You can really play a positive role by being someone who will listen and respond appropriately. So the way that we've kind of created this is through 5 steps that you can take. The first step is know your role. So first off, it's important that you're proactive, right? Especially if you're a mandatory reporter. So if you are a mandatory reporter, I would recommend that if you're working with athletes, you tell them in advance that you're a mandatory reporter and really explain what that means. For those of you that are working with kids, you want to make sure that you're using age-appropriate language. So you might say something like, you know, if you hurt someone or if someone hurts you, I do have to involve some other people. I have to report this. It's much, much better to be proactive than reactive and have to tell someone that you have to report something after they've already started to disclose to you. And in fact, a question I get in training is, oh, well, what if someone discloses to me? Should I cut them off? Should I stop them from sharing what they're sharing? And my answer to that would be no. I would really discourage doing that, because they may feel that you're, one, cutting them off, that you don't want to hear what they have to say. Again, they may be coming to you because they know that you're a mandatory reporter. But what you can do is just gently tell them, you can remind them, you know, what you're telling me is something that I do have to report to the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, to law enforcement, whatever that reporting authority is that you have the requirement to mandatory report. Remember that you are not a counselor or an investigator, so you do not need to ask questions to find out more details. You do not need to assess whether the information that they're sharing with you is true. So you don't need to ask them, like, do you have evidence? That's not your place to ask those kinds of questions. A helpful phrase you may consider using is, you don't have to share any information with me that you don't want to. In your role, you may provide the victim or survivor with knowledge and language about what abuse is and how to access help. So something that may happen is that victim or survivor, they may not realize that what they're describing to you is abuse, right? So maybe they're describing to you a sexual experience, and it really sounds to you like there was no consent involved in that. And an example of that would be, of course, where there's a power imbalance. So if there is a significant power imbalance between the person that was being abused and the person that abused them, for example, a coach and an athlete, and this is irregardless of age, if a coach and an athlete have a sexual experience, that is a violation of the code for the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic movement, because there is an inherent power imbalance between the coach and the athlete. But the athlete, especially with an adult athlete, they may think, well, I'm an adult, I consented to this. But it's really important that you let them know that there is a power imbalance there. So that would not be considered a consensual experience. What you can say to them is, what you're describing to me sounds like it might be a violation of the U.S. Center for Safe Sport code. I want you to know that I have to report this to the authorities, and I can help you find confidential support to guide you through this process. You're not defining the experience for them,
What you're saying is what you're describing sounds like a violation of the code. So they will define that experience or not on their own terms. Again, it's really not important for you to define it for them. But as a mandatory reporter, you do need to let them know that you have to report that. So again, that's just an example of a time where the victim or survivor may not realize that what happened to them was abuse. Okay. So step two is listen with empathy. And empathy is different from sympathy. Sympathy is feeling bad for someone, whereas empathy is feeling with someone. And I really recommend watching a YouTube video by Brené Brown. It's available online, and she talks about the difference between the two with a fun cartoon that goes with it. So I really recommend that you watch that video. I often show it in our trainings. But with listening with empathy, really, you're letting the person lead the conversation. The conversation is going at their pace. They're sharing what they're comfortable sharing. The individual, they may have a difficult time remembering what happened to them. And this is because trauma impacts memory. Oftentimes, we assume and expect that we will be able to recall major events in our lives with pure accuracy, right? But when it comes to a traumatic event, especially a sexual assault, it's encoded differently than a more routine, everyday experience in life. So as a result, a victim or survivor may not be able to remember every detail of what happened to them. It can be difficult for them to recall any details of the assault in a complete or linear way. So again, don't press them for details about what happened. If what they are saying maybe isn't making sense to you, that's okay. Right. Again, you're not an investigator. Their story doesn't need to make sense to you. With that, when you're having the conversation with the victim or survivor, it's okay if there's moments of silence. And I know a lot of us are really uncomfortable with that, but it is okay. You do not need to fill the silence. So they can share what they're sharing. You can, you know, sit next to them, have that moment of silence. Because oftentimes people just don't know what to say, and that's okay too. You could literally say to them, I don't know what to say right now, but I'm so glad that you told me. Or thank you for trusting me, and I'm gonna do whatever I can to help you. In that conversation, when you're listening with empathy, there are a couple of things that I'd recommend that you avoid. I already stated that, you know, we really recommend that you don't ask a lot of questions, but specifically ask me a lot of why questions, like why were you alone with them? Again, these types of questions are not your job to ask. A trained investigator may ask questions like this to find more information about what happened. You're not responsible to investigate someone's disclosure. You are there to support the victim or survivor. The other thing when we're on the receiving end of a disclosure is make sure that you don't doubt their experience. So asking questions like, are you sure that's what happened? Again, these questions might come up. You might think that they're helpful because what they're describing to you isn't really making sense, but it can really make them feel some more guilt or shame or blame around the experience. So leave those questions out. Another consideration is just thinking about personal space, right? So it's especially important with victim survivors of sexual abuse and physical abuse that we never hug or touch them. So you might be a hugger. You might be the kind of person that, you know, wants to put a hand on someone's shoulder when you're supporting them. But it's incredibly important that you respect their personal space and that you do not hug or touch them. And then again, with the space that you're in is just, you know, make sure that you're never blocking a way for them to exit. So you're not blocking a door. You're not locking the door. Because that could really make them feel trapped or make them feel unsafe. So you want to make sure that they always know that they can leave that space if they want to. Now, step three is asking how you can help. So with this step, we want to provide the victim and survivor a sense of control over the process of disclosure. Abuse is rooted in power, control, and inequity. So I would caution you against giving or telling the victim or survivor what they should do or giving them any kind of advice. If you're telling them what to do, you are ultimately exerting power and control over them. For those of you that are mandatory reporters, the only next step that you legally have to take is to make a mandatory report. But you can also be, of course, supportive during that disclosure, and you may even offer the victim or survivor the opportunity to fill out the mandatory report online form with you. Again, you're just making a suggestion. You're not telling them that they have to fill out the form with you. Step four is telling them what you will do next. So as I mentioned at the beginning, for many victim survivors, they might be fearful about what's going to happen next after they disclose. So it's important that you let them know what you're going to do next. For those of you that are mandatory reporters and you fill out the report, you might talk to them about what they can expect after a report has been filed with the center. On our website, that's uscenterforsafesupport.org, we have helpful infographics that break down the process. And we also have questions or FAQs that answer some of the most common questions that we get about investigations. You might say to the victim or survivor, even though I have to report, in the safe support process, you always have the choice about whether to participate or not. So again, we're really emphasizing their agency and choice over the process and what happens next. And then the last step is one of the most important ones is referring them to resources. One of the best ways that you can be supportive is by knowing what resources are available and referring athletes to them. The main resource that we recommend that you refer athletes to is the Safe Sport Helpline. It's available 24/7, it's free, it's confidential, and it can be accessed either by phone or by chat. The U.S. Center for Safe Sport Helpline is not staffed by U.S. Center for Safe Sport staff. It is staffed by RAIN, which is the Rape, Abuse, Incest National Network, and they run the National Sexual Assault Hotline, which is also available 24/7. So just so you know, our helpline is staffed by RAIN, again, not staffed by the U.S. Center for Safe Sport employees, and it is available 24/7, it's free, and it's confidential. I want to end this podcast episode with sharing two statistics from our recent 2020 Athlete Culture and Climate Survey that I think really highlight the importance of being supportive when we're on the receiving end of a disclosure. So we found from the Athlete Culture and Climate Survey that nearly 68% of athletes who experienced unwanted sexual contact or sexual harassment indicated that they did not feel that they had a place to talk about their experiences within their governing body of sport. The other statistic that I'm going to share is staggering. We found that 93% of athletes who experienced sexual harassment or unwanted sexual contact did not submit a formal report or complaint of it. So again, that's why it's so important that we educate people on how to be supportive to survivors of abuse, because I would love to see both of those stats change. I would love for athletes to be able to feel that they can talk about what happened to them in their sport, and for athletes to be able to submit a formal report or complaint of that abuse to the center and to law enforcement. Now that is it for our episode today. Of course, I want to end with our final important note, which is that if you know of or suspect abuse or misconduct, please report it anytime, anywhere at our Report a Concern portal, and that's available at uscenterforsafesport.org. Or if you have confidential or anonymous questions, contact the Safe Sport Helpline, and that's available at safesporthelpline.org. Thanks for listening. Tune in next time and visit our website to hear more episodes.